Hello.
Hello, am I speaking to Robert McNeil?
Yes.
Hi, Robert. It's James calling from MMA Legal. How are you? Okay?
Well, Jim, I'm all right.
Good to hear. Good to
Nearly.
hear. Just so you're aware, the phone call is recorded for training and monitoring purposes. Can I just ask you three questions in regards to data protection? What
Yeah.
is your date of birth, Robert?
That's the 1st of the 7th, 1978.
Fantastic. And then your postal address?
That's 59 Dukot Court, Perth, PH11TL.
Fantastic. And either your mobile number or your email address, please.
That's robertmcneil383@gmail.com.
Fantastic. Okay, Robert, the purpose of today's call is to take a detailed witness statement about your time in Perth, what happened to you, how it affected you, and what evidence may exist. Throughout this call, I will guide you through the questions of the witness statement. Some of the questions may feel a bit difficult, just so you are aware. So if you ever wish to take a break at any time, you're perfectly okay to do so, just make me aware. And as well as if there's at any point where it seems as though we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves, I will have to bring us back to the current timeline, just to make sure that your statement is clear and complete. Okay, fantastic. So just before we go, I just need to make sure and ask a few questions before we get into the details. Are you comfortable and happy to continue with this written statement today?
Aye.
Do you need anyone with you or to take a break or any other adjustments throughout the call?
My partner's through another room, eh?
Your partner in the other room. Am I right in thinking your partner being Abby Louise Grant?
Yeah.
Yeah. I noticed on the file that you'd wish for us to take a supporting statement from your mother Anne Ryan as well as your partner Abby Louise Grant. Is that something that you'd still wish?
Aye.
Oh, any.
I provide it,
Okay, no problem. We'll give them a call and ask once we're through with your witness statement anyway. And furthermore, do you understand the purpose of the statement and agree that it may be used for your Scottish rewrite application and any supporting evidence?
Aye.
Fantastic. Okay. So first, we're just going to go into your personal background, Robert, and as well as how you became into Qatar. So the first thing I need to know is what was the area you grew up, where you grew up before Qatar, and who lived with you?
I was born Falkirk Royal, 1978.
At Falkirk Royal.
Aye, Falkirk Royal, 1978. Went and lived at my gran's for a bit, for a few months until my mum and dad got married. My gran
Oh,
wouldn't let them live under the same roof, out of wedlock.
wow. If I'm ever quiet at any point during the call, Robert, it's
Ah,
just literally I'm
that's
just
all right,
typing
James.
up the notes, that's all. What was the address at your nan at your grandma's if you remember?
I'm ready. On my birth certificate, I 43 Wilson Avenue. Was
Okay,
there.
could you spell that for me, please?
WILSON.
Wilson Avenue.
Aye.
So you're born in Falkirk Royal, 1998, and you lived with your gran before.
1978.
Apologies, apologies, mate. 1978. You lived with your gran before. You moved in with your parents when they got married at 14
Well, I
or.
lived with my mother at my grandmother's house. Then after my mother and father got married, moved into my father's mother's house until my mother and father got a house. Was there for a few years. That was that, to be at 6 Chestnut Crescent.
And that was at 6 Chestwood Crescent.
I mean, we were there for a few years until my mum and dad got a house and stuff like
Yeah, no,
that.
great. And
Then
it
we
was
moved.
in.
we moved to number 67 in the same street.
Did you say 67 Chestwood Crescent?
Yeah, yeah.
Could you just confirm when you moved in with your father before they, your mother and your father got their own house? Was it with your grandfather?
It was with my papa and my grandmother, my father's mother and father, eh?
Could you tell me what home life was before you moved into Curzo? What was your health and family?
My family life was great. It wasn't like it was actually in care and care. It was a remand institute, eh?
Sorry,
I should never have been in.
Sorry, Robert, just hold on 1 second. So you state your family life was great and it was...
My family life was pretty good, eh? Well, it was doing Dunny Pace at my father's mother and father's. It wasn't up at my mum's mother and father's, eh?
Can you remember what your education life was like before you went into...
Aye, very much. Loads of signs there, loads of signs not there that I was being abused and stuff. Not
yep.
Never picked up on then, but something did get picked up on. And it just disappeared there.
We can go into that when it gets into the part. We want to try and keep in a chronological order and not want to get ahead of ourselves. When you was in education, how would you describe your time in education with Orca?
Primary school was kind of all right, apart from getting bullied off of one teacher. That's the one I believe one of my uncles attacked, eh?
So at the moment, I've just got my family was great. Primary school was kind of all right. Other than getting bullied by one teacher, I believe that the one my uncle attacked. Do you remember any social work difficulties or anything like that before you was placed into care?
Yes, aye.
And would you briefly be able to describe that? What you?
I'm a child psychologist and a child social worker, Martin Jess. See what his name was, and
Martin.
I'm sure my child psychologist's name was Irene Jardine or something like that, if I remember correctly.
And how would you describe your overall services given before you was put into care?
Absolutely terrible, disgusting, and non-existent. So anything I've told them numerous times and that about all this stuff. I'm gathering that's either by it's all redacted or they're just not allowed to know it at all. Eh?
Yeah.
Just a lot of control and manipulation. And apart from say. The child social work team and the adult social work team.
No problem. So, Robert, do you remember how you came to enter care and who made the decision and were you told the reasons as to why?
I was given an apology and told I should never have been there. I was just not long before I left the school, in 1994. 1990 I went to the high school. I kind of went up, but I went after Ailes. My uncle came back for the army. I'd suffered significant abuse as a child, and he came back for the army. I went after Ailes, and I ended up at a day unit and stuff. So this child psychologist and the social worker were meant to come back and see me after visiting me. My mum and dad had split up by this point. And they came out and seen me with my mum. Then they came out and visited me with my dad. Taking me out to the day unit and stuff like that to meet the teachers and stuff to start at Bannockburn Day Unit at Hull Park and Hull Park in Bannockburn. They were meant to come back and see me again on my own to speak to me on my own and stuff about allegations and stuff and that had happened, and they never ever appeared. Like that's the way they told us that they would work. That was that they'd come out and see me with my mum, they'd come out and see me with my dad, they'd get me on a placement in this day unit and stuff like that, and they'd come out and see me and talk to me on my own once I'd kind of settled in a bit and stuff. It never ever happened. There was kind of talk about kind of the abuse and stuff like that, and stuff that I'd been accused of. And that's when it's came out. I've told them about the abuse and stuff, and what was actually really going on. They'd back it to see me on my own, like, but it kind of follow up. Nothing ever happened, and I was there for a couple of years. I was at a tutor and stuff before I went there. Well, they were only giving me like 2 hours of education a week. By law, that's all you're entitled to in Britain.
Yeah.
But they'll jail your parents for you throwing it in the school.
Oh, yeah. We'll come back to that shortly, but before we move on.
I was at a tutor for a while, and it was very much like the business schooling. Like, she'd never give me books on how to build deadfall traps and make bows and arrows and things like that. Like, yeah. She wasn't even a high school teacher, she was a primary school teacher. Was all the kind of stuff she was doing to me, kind of try and relate to me.
Yeah, try and build somewhat of a connection.
I don't think it's really appropriate in schooling a child now to do that kind of stuff. So I was at that for maybe a year or something.
So we just go back to the beginning. So essentially, it's to be, I've got some moments that you left school in 1994.
It was just before I left the school. My friend had stolen his dad's car. I was on my BMX. I was cycling out to Bonnybridge, which is the next village there. It's about three or 4 miles away after that.
Yeah.
So I was cycling out to the next town over to see my girlfriend that I was seeing at the time. And my pal pulls up in a big Sea Ridge Ford Granada, and a big 2.9 litre V6 thing. It was a kind of sky blue colour, like a kind of silvery blue. He pulls up next to me on that. I was still in Chestnut Crescent at the time. I'd just left my mum's house and I'd cycled round the corner, and he pulled up and his dad's kind of asked me if I wanted to go a spin. So I nipped back round the house and put my bike in the house. He turned the car around, came around and picked us up. We went up going to be a bit drive all about Stirling, face Stirling, down through like Preen, all the kind of areas, and down into Falkirk. Up through the back of Falkirk, like drove about Falkirk and that, back into Denny.
Yeah.
And then we were back into the house. We were just literally going to the house and locked the door, and within minutes there was police everywhere. We just sat and waited till they went away, and I've went away. A couple of days has passed. The police have come out and charged me with stealing a motor vehicle. They charged me to be allowing myself to be carried as a passenger in a stolen vehicle.
Hold on, man.
Then,
a couple of days.
There was
Yeah, please. Sorry, Robert. Please. What was it that they arrested you for, Robert?
They arrested me for allowing myself to be carried as a passenger in a stolen vehicle. That's what they charged me with. Then, when I went to court, no, I got a letter, so I turned 16. This was in April or something like that. It was before I left the school. I left the school on the 31st of May, 1994. So, it was a weekend holiday or something like that in April, or something like that, if I mind correctly. And that's when this happened, eh? Just before I left the school. So it was only like a few months before I turned 16. Then just when I turned 16, I get a letter and saying I have to go to the PF's office. It was the PF's office. So of course I went into court and they were like, no. So I went into court with this letter and that. And they were like, no, that's round the corner, pal. And I went round the corner. Yeah, so I mean, I've got, and they were like, we don't know what it's about, pal, and I broke my wrist playing five-a-side football on the Sunday night. This was a Monday or something. So I broke my wrist, and I was needing to go to the hospital. They couldn't tell me why I needed to be there or where I had to be. So I went to the hospital and got a Stuka and that put on, and they put a warrant out for me. I got lifted on the warrant and got remanded. I've got a 4-week remand.
1 second. The
only thing that's charged off in my criminal record about 4 years ago or something.
So it was on the ward, you were then, while she was on the ward, you then got remanded?
No, I went into the hospital and got a Stuka in that, put an X-ray in that, and I broke my wrist.
Yeah.
Fractured my arm. It was like fractured places and like the joint and that and that. So I went in and got that done. They couldn't tell me why I needed to be at the court and that. I got this letter in for to go to the court, went to the PF's office, and they were like, no, we've no record that you meant to be here, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, look at this, I'm no thing about, I'm in pain, I need to get a Stuka in that one. Get an X-ray and get Stuka in that one. So they put a warrant out because of that, saying I hadn't appeared in that court. I didn't know nothing about lawyers or anything like this point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I didn't know I had to get a lawyer or anything like that. I just had this letter saying I was to go through there, and I went through and they couldn't tell me why I was to be there or anything like that. And so I went away to the hospital because I did have a medical emergency. Because of that, I got a warrant put for me, so I then gets lifted weeks later, and I get remanded into Longer again.
One second. So I just got, at 16 you went to the court from the letter that you would receive, turned away, you was turned away and was told that you wasn't told the reason.
I didn't know why I was there, but I was today, I'm a young 16-year-old, but I just turned 6, just left the school, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a time for anybody, especially dealing with the stuff I was already dealing with.
Yeah,
and I get put in there. And I got put in that long again, dude. Well, we're up to Berlin for the first night, centre for that.
So, after you was remanded, do you remember where you went after that? Was you placed with, within...
I went up to Berlin for a night. I went up to the first night centre in Berlin. And they came and got me. It was a big blue minibus at the time. And we used to call it the Venga bus. That's came and picked us up the next day and took us to Long Big End and called our crooks in Airdrie. That'd have been
Do you have
my third night? That'd have been my third night in custody because the first night police station.
Yeah, no problem. The next part of the statement for the personal background and the entry into care, Robert, do you have any siblings and were you separated from any of them?
I separated from my brother and my sister.
Would you just be able to confirm for me your brother and your sister's name, Robert?
My sister's name's Lorna.
Still Lorna McNeil.
Aye. Lorna McNeil Fox, her name, isn't it? I didn't really take anything to do with her.
And then your brother's name?
James.
James McNeil. Fantastic. How old was you, Robert, when you first entered Kerr? So 16. How do you remember how you felt when you was first placed into Barlinnie?
Terrified.
Okay, no problem. Is there anything important about your childhood health, learning needs, vulnerability, or name history that should be recorded?
I was a prolific bedwetter.
Yeah.
I went to bed till I was 21.
Now we're going to move on to the next stage of the witness statement, Robert. And this stage is the Kerr placement chronology. So I just need to fill out a table, just the Kerr settings, what you have, the location of the Kerr settings, approximate date and age, the placing authority. So at the moment, we are aware that you went to Barlinnie, and this was on the 9th of August, 1995. Could you confirm if you were 17 or if you were 18 at that time? Was you in 1995 at the 10th and 9th of August? Do you remember if you would have been 17 or 16 at the time?
I'd have been in 1995 in August. I'd have been 17.
17, yeah, no problem. That's perfectly fine. And so we've got the approximate date for that being the 9th to the 10th of August, and then on the 11th of August you were transferred to the Longrigg End. Up until the 21st of August 1995. And then we have a placement that you went to Barlinnie, but we're unsure as to the gap from Barlinnie. Was you released from Barlinnie once you were transferred
I got an apology from the judge and told that I should never ever have been put in there. I shouldn't even have been at court. There shouldn't have been proceedings to take me to court or anything. An apology for the judge. He apologised to me and apologised to my mother and says my mother would be waiting for me getting released very shortly and she could take me for a McDonald's.
Hopefully the McDonald's would have been somewhat of a silver lining, but
not really. I'd already had a turd burglar in about me.
So
McDonald's had a big thing about burger burglars back then.
So the next stage, Robert, is the compact placement sheet. So we're going to go from one institution at a time. I understand that you wasn't at Barlinnie for long, but...
No, it was just one night, eh?
Yeah, even so, we still have to include it, just obviously be as meticulous as possible. When I ask you the next following questions, try to stay on track with literally just the experience of your Barlinnie. Okay?
Aye.
So, would you be able to give me the institutional name, location, approximate date, age, and who placed you there?
I was placed there by... placed into Barlinnie for Falkirk Sheriff Court. Was it Judge Sheenan, I think it was?
Selkirk. Did you say Sheriff Carr?
Sheriff somebody, Sheriff Sheenan, maybe. I know it was Sheriff Murphy I went up in front of. I think they apologised to me when I got released 2 weeks later.
Hold on 1 second, Rob. Try not to just get ahead of ourselves. We're going to try and stick within the chronology just to keep a time frame. I'm sorry if I'm interrupting you.
My cellmate's name in Berlin was Stephen Gunn.
Could you confirm for me the date where you went? Where you went to HMP Barlinnie?
I can't remember the exact date.
That's fine. And who did you say placed you there?
I was placed there by Falkirk Sheriff Court.
Okay. What type of setting was this, and how long were you there?
It was very much a prison setting. Kind of a very strict kind of regime. Wasn't very nice.
And how long were you there at Barlinnie?
I was at Berlinnie for a night. A night and a morning. If I mind right. Just a first night centre thing. They take everybody through the courts and all up there. That's what they done back then. Then they take you out to wherever you were gone.
Yeah. I know this might sound a bit of a peculiar question, given that you was obviously there for a night and a morning at Barlinnie, but in a few sentences, what was your ordinary life like here at this at HMP Barlinnie? Would you be able to describe what the accommodation was like?
It was a regular cell. A couple of pots in it for a pee or to urinate or squat on it. There's no toilet or nothing in your cell. There's no glass in the windows. There's no wire strung bed. And I'd say the mattress must have at least had to be at least about 20-year-old. You'd have thought they'd have died on it, eh?
Yeah. Would you be able to go more into the hygiene of the cell? Was the cell clean? Was it?
No, it was disgusting. The conditions were disgusting. Even like when we first went in, like a cubicle had 4 ears. A cubicle for one person had 4 ears in it. That was an admission. I think the boy that was in was a 30-year-old older than me. I remember him vividly.
Would you be able to describe what the clothing was like? Was the clothing clean and hygienic?
Meant to be clean. I wouldn't say it was hygienic. They gave you Y fronts that had big, let's just say they looked like tiger stripes on the back of them. They were too big for you. You had to tie a knot on the side of them. Like they'd come in and inspect you to make sure you were wearing everything and all that.
If you ever hear me, just if the phone goes a bit quiet, it's just because I'm catching up on the notes. how would you say the food was, and was you able to contact your family whilst you spent the time in the HMP Balleny?
I didn't contact my family when I was in Bali.
And you didn't contact them, is that due to them
No, but I was
not
only there. I
coming?
was only there a night. I contacted them once I got up to Long again.
No problem. So on to the next question, Robert. How did staff and other children generally treat you? Were there rules, punishments, isolation, or unsafe arrangements when you was a HMP Balleny?
No, but that was like a boy. I was locked up. It was, I think, like it wasn't his first time in the jail, eh? Well, it wasn't his first time in there. He was going up to Longreggend as well, so he was maybe a couple of years older than me, I think.
And he was transferred to Longreggend with you.
Aye.
How was you treated by the staff whilst you was at HMP Balleny?
The staff at Balleny were fine, eh? It was the staff at Longreggend that were terrible.
Whilst you was at Longreggend, sorry, apologies, Robert. Whilst you was at your time at Balleny, can you recall anything that happened what you would now consider neglectful or harmful? This kind of abuse, be it either sexual, physical, emotional, or, as previously mentioned, neglect.
No, but just the conditions admission and that were terrible, eh? Actually, to tell you the truth, I actually preferred the jail when it was slow.
So it was just the conditions were terrible at HMP at Balleny. During your time in HMP Balleny, do you remember anyone who was involved in your time there? That being anyone who would be responsible for anything whilst you were there, including names, roles, description. Staff, no.
I don't remember any of their names at all. I'm the same for long again and all. I just remember their actions, eh? You weren't able to lift your head up to look at their name tags or anything like that.
Why was you not allowed to look at the name tags?
I don't know. So I'll imagine that's, it was very much a kind of like retainer, a kind of military approach to it, and kind of like screaming in your face and that, keep your eyes to the ground and all that kind of stuff. There was another young offenders placed after they were sentenced and that, up here in Scotland at Glen Oakland. They used to make you go out and march and all that. They'd do dust patrols and that kind of stuff. Like you'd get time added onto your sentence for your bars being dusty and things like
Did you experience any immediate effects when you was placed into Bali? And so the examples of these effects being, did you suffer any pain, injury whilst you was in Berlin? Any fear, any shame, sleep problems, bedwetting,
Aye.
in a way, behaviour of
Aye, there was plenty of fear and shame. I didn't get in there and get hosed in and deloused and stood there naked in front of loads of men and that. Aye, it was very daunting and scary. It's your body that's meant to get deloused, not your face. They didn't keep up with that practice anymore.
So when you was delayed, so they put that. Hold on a second. During that experience, and during from the effects from what you experienced, did anyone witness it at the time, know about it, or experience anything similar?
The other prison officers, there's loads of folk that experienced all this.
And you don't recall any of the prison officers' names, no?
No. Like, 2 weeks in there isn't really enough. That back then, and the way their system and that was, man, that isn't enough time to even get to your feet back on the ground.
Mm.
2 weeks, you know what I mean? That's not even enough time to straighten you up to even be bothering about people's names.
Yeah. So, I know these questions are obviously in relation to Berlin, and I know it's obviously difficult because of the duration you were there at Berlin, but we will eventually move on to Long again to get a statement from there. So, did you tell anyone or try to get help in relation to being delaced and having it in your put on your face instead of your body? And what response did you receive? And if you did not receive a response, why not?
But that's something you'd need to ask them. I wouldn't know why they wouldn't give you a response. I'm not a mind reader. But that's right, like they've got a bit of power, so all they're showing is their true character.
Yeah.
If that's what they're doing at work, what are they doing at home?
And again, what would you state was different at your time at Berlin compared to Longregend?
Berlin, that was because the prisoners and that are a lot more settled. Like back then, it was very much a society was a lot different back then, compared to where it is now. Like, if you were out being older ones, cheeker and that, or anything like, you get your lug clipped for it. You know, like all the wee shites that run about nowadays. Like, you showed a lot of respect and stuff like that. You didn't get cheap to your elders and that kind of stuff. So it was a lot kind of calmer. And there, like, I think their kind of approach to was like, you should be seen and no heard kind of thing. But they weren't bad. Like, I ended up in there again years later. And they were brand new. But the kind of funny thing was, some of them could remember me. They could tell you when you came in and that. Without going and looking at the computer, just be your jail number, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I've had other ones, but that's an offender's number, that. You must have got that, such and such. I mean, this is discussions I'd be ones years later, eh?
Yeah, of course. But back to bring it back into the question before we move on, what would you state was, what highlights most to you, looking back, what was different at your time in Barlinnie compared to your time at Longrigend?
My time at Barlinnie and my time at Longrigend. But there was any excessive bullying, groping or abuse or that in Barlinnie. For the prison staff.
There wasn't by the prison staff.
No, in Barlinnie there wasn't. No, to me anyway. That wasn't until I got back down the road to Longrigend, eh?
No problem. So now we're going to go through the same questions again, Robert. But this is going to be in relation to your time at Longrigend. Okay?
Aye.
Okay. Brilliant. So, again, would you kindly confirm for me the institution name, the approximate date you were placed there, the age you was, and who placed you there?
I got placed in Longrigend. I got remanded at Falkirk Sheriff Court. Went for Falkirk Sheriff Court to the First Night Centre at Barlinnie, then for the First Night Centre at Barlinnie to Longrigend. So my second in there. Went in, shame again, deloused all that carry on. Made to have a shower and that. Walk about naked and that in front of prison officers and that in reception.
No, we'll come back to that shortly. Before we move on, we'll just continue with the questions one step at a time. So I've got you was remanded from Falkirk Sheriff Court to go to Barlinnie, and then you was transferred from Barlinnie to Longrigend. And would you be able to confirm to me the age you was when you went to when you was transferred from Barlinnie to
well, if you're saying that was like 95, I'd have just turned 17.
Can I just type up the notes? And again, Robert, what type of setting was it and how long was you there at HMP Longrigend?
I got remanded for 4 weeks. I was there for two. They'd added a charge of stealing the motor vehicle onto it, but I'd been charged with. But that wasn't what I got charged with initially. I just got charged with allowing myself to be carried as a passenger in a stolen vehicle. The boy who stole the cars obviously says that I've stolen.
So you were mandated for 4 weeks, and then you were there for a further 2 weeks. Due to an added further vehicle motor vehicle charge.
No, I was meant to be there for 4 weeks. I was only there for two.
Okay, no problem.
My mother got me a lawyer.
So, 4 weeks. Your mother got you a lawyer?
My mum had got me a lawyer. Somebody said me at college, they were just starting up a local firm in Falkirk. She was doing loads of stuff to do with the poll tax and that at the time.
Yeah.
And end up meeting these lawyers through a friend. And that got lifted. She ended up contacting them.
Mm-hmm.
So they managed to get me done early for a plea. I was like, I'm just gonna plead guilty to this. Like, get me done to court kind of thing. I was gonna plead guilty to it. He managed to get me a court date. Instead of me going back up in the 4 weeks, he managed to get me done 2 weeks early. And that's when I got the apology and that for the judge, saying that should never ever have been there. Should never have been brought to court.
And a few sentences at your time until this is for your duration of long weekend. What was your ordinary day-to-day like being day life at Longreggend? What was the accommodation like, the routine, what you had? Was there any school/work, what you did while she was in there? The standard of the food, clothing, hygiene, and the contact with your family?
It was terrible. It was absolutely disgusting. I had a chemical toilet in the first cell I went into. It was broken, leaking. Didn't have a proper lid in that for it.
Broken. No lid, did you say?
Didn't have the wee flap for flushing it. That was just non-existent. So it was just stinking of chemicals and feces and urine. It made your eyes water. It was absolutely disgusting. They gave you a big, horrible, woolly blanket thing and all. A disgusting old faded pair of jeans that were too big for you. I actually had to gnaw through a bit of lace off my trainer for to tie it around the belt loops on my jeans to keep them up. To bite through at least.
Whilst you was there, HMP Longreggend, how did the staff treat you? Were there rules, any punishments, isolation, or unsafe arrangements?
The staff were absolutely disgusting.
So the treatment of the staff, as you state, was terrible. Absolutely disgusting. Would you be able to elaborate on that? Could you remember any of the treatment that you succumbed to?
Everything was all single file. Like, the first bit I was in, I was doubled up in the annex hall, which was a wee hall just after the A hall and that.
Yeah.
You came out of reception, walked up the hall, through the door, through to the left. There was like a corridor with the cells and that on it. If I mind, I had a wee library and stuff in it. I can't remember the exact number of the cell and that I was in, but I got doubled up. It was the first couple of nights or something. It was very much single file, faces to the floor, only to speak when spoken to.
And would you say that was the genuine rules that was given to you?
Aye, pretty much.
Do you recall any of the punishments that you faced while you were at Longreggend? Did you receive any isolation or any unsafe?
I was isolated, but I ended up after I was in the annex hall. I was doubled up for a couple of days. Then they moved me over to C Hall, put me in a cell by myself. I wasn't there that long. It seemed like an eternity, but it wasn't that long I was there. Then they moved me over to the second flat in A Hall. I looked out over the courtyard. Uh, Before I went to A Hall, before I went over to C Hall, that was when the assaults and that took place. In the annex hall, eh? And my cell and in the office.
No problem. So next thing to ask you, Robert, is did anything happen there that you now consider abuse, neglect, or harmful? And the abuse being either sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, or neglect. If you would like me to explain...
Pretty much all of the above, eh?
All of the above.
Pretty much all of the above.
Hold on a second. The next following questions I will ask may be distressing. If you do need to take a break or anything like that, just obviously make me aware. Before I continue with the questions, as you stated that you had a little bit of all the above being for neglect, which would be classed as inadequate or withheld food, clothing, warmth, hygiene, supervision, safety, medical care, education or support, unsafe confinement or failure to protect from bullying, violence, sexual harm, older children or unsafe adults. And the emotional abuse, what would be clarified as that is any threats you received, humiliation, blame, name-calling, isolation, different treatment, denial of family contact, being made to feel powerless or unwanted, or being forced to witness the abuse or humiliation of others. Physical abuse, the examples of this being hitting, slapping, punching, kicking, shaking, throwing, restraint, locking in, exposure to cold or hot water, denial of food or toilet access or use of an object, recorded injury / pain and whether treatment was provided, needed, hidden or ignored, and then finally for the sexual abuse, it being unwanted sexual touching or exposure, sexual comments / images, being made to watch, pressure or force to take part, attempted or actual penetration or oral activity, masturbation, photography or filming, grooming, gifts, threats or secrecy, number of people involved and approximately frequency and duration. So for now, Robert, would you be able to tell me who was involved or responsible for any of the abuse that you suffered? Of that, would you be able to tell me the names, the roles, a brief description of what they look like?
Aye, 2 seconds, Mr. Simone, phone.
Are you still there, Robert?
Aye.
Okay, no problem. So the next question being, do you recall who was involved or responsible, including any names, roles, descriptions of the staff members?
No, but not happened. Like I was saying, it was all like single file, face to the floor. Like looking, the eye was to be looking down and all that kind of stuff. And we're coming in, it wasn't until like that first night in Long again. And they were coming in, so it was the back shift. So every one of them is guilty.
Yeah.
That's guilt by association. They keep silent about that, they're guilty of that and offered them nothing. They're party to it. They're associated to it, so they're guilty and all. That's what they do to criminals. They've done criminal actions and they've kept quiet about it, so they're party to it. Every one of them is guilty. Both shifts. Morning shift, back shift. The only one that didn't get any day in it was the night shift.
Okay. This is going to be a very distressing question, but it does need to be meticulous just as a part, obviously, application of your witness statement. Due to you stating that you've experienced all four of the said factors of abuse, would you be able to give me one clear example of each form of abuse that you experienced? You have to, well, first we'll go through with neglect. So would you be able to give a clear example of what happened, where and when did it occur, and what happened before the neglect, during and afterwards?
For the neglect?
Yeah, so the neglect
neglect being left in a cell with an open chemical toilet. No release to, no allowed to go to the toilet. Being reprimanded for pressing your buzzer for needing it for the toilet.
So when you was reprimanded for pressing the buzzer, what would follow from the guards coming?
Very much. Fear, intimidation, violence, sexual assault.
Sorry about that, Robert. I'm just there.
That's all right, James.
So when you say it was followed by violence, we do need to be a bit meticulous. Would you be able to explain what the violence was, what you received?
Grabbed by the throat, forced up and flung up against the wall, groped in about my genital areas. My testicles crushed.
And was that by the staff member themselves?
Aye, I was abused by more than one staff member, eh? I'm already terrified at this point. I'd already been assaulted by one of them the night before.
Can you provide a clear example of what happened during when you was a victim of emotional abuse, where it happened in the prison, and when did it occur, and what happened immediately before the abuse endured, what happened during, and then what happened following the emotional abuse. If you'd like to take a minute to go and get a drink or anything like that, Robert, you are, feel free to do so, and we can take a break for 5 minutes.
Aye, that'd be great, thanks.
Yeah, no problem. If you'd like
Get
to go
me
get a
sorted
drink,
out.
you can put yourself on hold, and I'll just wait on the other end of the phone and
Right,
let you know
cheers.
when you get back. Yeah, no problem.
Thanks, James.
No problem, mate.
James.
Hi, Robert. Yeah, I'm still here. How are you doing? You okay?
I'm all right, aye.
That's good. Good to hear. Like I said, just take your time when it comes to this witness statement. If you'd like to take a break at any other further point, just let me know and we can pause and then we can continue when you're ready to do so. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic, Robert.
Yes.
So, would you be able to give one clear example of what happened when you experienced emotional abuse? Where was you when that happened, and when did it occur?
Emotional abuse.
Yes. So with emotional abuse, any emotional abuse would be anything being threats made to you, any humiliation, blame, name calling, any isolation, different treatment compared to other inmates, denial of any family contact, being made to feel powerless or unwanted, or being forced to witness the abuse or humiliation of others.
Humiliated. One instance, being in the office.
It was in the office.
In the office, after my first visit with my mother. She handed in magazines and that for me.
She handed in what, sorry?
She handed in comics and magazines for me.
Oh, yeah.
My mother, it was my brother, and my friend came up. I remember that because they weren't going to let my friend in because he was wearing a pink and white striped Ralph Lauren shirt, and it clashed with the uniforms they made you wear. Years ago, they used to make you wear pink and white, faded to pink, red and white kind of pinstripe shirts, and blue and white pinstripe shirts.
Blue and white pinstripe shorts.
And pink and red and white pinstripe ones as well, eh? So they weren't going to let him in because of that. They end up, a T-shirt or something like that. It was like an old clothes bin to put on for it coming in. She is. They've added in magazines and comics and stuff for us. There used to be a Scottish version of The Viz called Electric Soup.
Electric Soup.
Aye. That was one of the kind of comics that got handed in for us. Tooth and things like that. I went up to the office to ask for like my books and magazines and stuff that had been handed in for me. Got assaulted in that again then as well. I was told that they were sitting with their feet on, one of them was sitting with their feet on the desk reading my comic. I was told to get all my stuff when he was finished with it. The other one wasn't happy with the way I was kind of responding to him. He grabbed me by the throat, flung me up against the wall. His hands down the front of my trousers, groped and crushed my testicles.
Okay, one moment where I just make these notes, Robert.
At this point, I'm already terrified because I've already been sexually assaulted. Just like this. Derogatory name calling and that, mocking me for wetting the bed.
As you just described being when you was assaulted by the officer, when he gripped you by the throat, was this immediately after you responded to him saying that you could have your belongings once he was finished with them?
One of them was sitting with his feet up on the desk reading my comic. the other one flung me up against the wall by the throat, told me to keep looking at the floor. Told to enjoy my bed wetting and that later on as well, things like that.
So moving on to the next question, Robert. How often did this happen, and over what period did it happen, and did the change get worse?
It did, like, it followed me each bit of the jail. A different thing happened each bit.
Every day, so it's pretty much every day. And did you say it was at every part of the prison?
Pretty much in every part of the prison I was in, yeah. The prison officers really only kind of eased off after one of the older inmates threatened one of them. He was a good bit older than me, and he was bigger than most of the prison officers.
Yeah. So would this be an overview period? So would this be over the 2 weeks of what?
Aye. They took me outside and tried to make me pick up human feces and all that as well. All the stuff people have been flinging out their windows.
Did any of the abuse that you experienced at this time, Robert, did it become worse at any point? Did it escalate?
But pretty much escalated to pretty much the kind of worst it could be my first night in there. It couldn't really get any worse. He was more offended at my bed being all urine when he's came in. This is a different shift, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This came in the morning. I got assaulted the first night and one weekend. Then again in the morning, and that's when they started mocking us and that for the bed wetting and stuff.
Mm-hmm. So, following the first night and following the abuse that you experienced, Robert, what immediate effects did you feel from the abuse? So this being any pain and injury you suffered, any fear, any shame, sleeping problems, bedwetting, running away, or any behaviour changes? Is this something that you noticed within yourself?
There's any kind of thought or figure that I'm constantly on the defence with them, mate.
Following what you experienced, did you have any issues with your sleep?
Yeah. Honest. Sorry.
We'll try to be as quick as we can, but we just need to try and make sure we get everything as accurate as possible. The next question would be, did anyone witness what you experienced, know about it, or did they experience anything similar?
There's loads of people experience similar in there. approach the government and services and that are all taking on it, and it's just to leave it and no speak about it. Forget about it and move on. That's what everybody says, eh? That's their new take on it. Services and that here, eh? Like, and it's absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
You're going to talk to folk about it and they didn't keep notes, nay, nothing. But you're not allowed to record your appointments or nothing like that.
Yeah. It is frustrating.
Then if you pull out a pen and a bit of paper, they're just like, oh, I've not got time for this. Fobbed off again.
Yeah, they shouldn't be operating like that. Nah,
it's not
more of an issue. Obviously, you wish to find help. Are you aware of any names or anyone, or aware of anyone who who witnessed your abuse that you've
experienced? The only person that I'd have witnessed any of that would have been my co-pilot the first few nights I was there in the annex hall, eh? That was the only cell that I had where I had another inmate in with me.
And when you say co-pilot, that's reference to
my cellmate, yeah. Aye. I mind, I think he was Feasters or something like that in Glasgow, eh? I can't even remember his name. I remember I'd kind of split up with him and moved for there. Like, there was another few boys from Falkirk had came in with me as well. And the boy that I was locked up with ended up going in and assaulting one of them. I can't even remember his name. I remember the name of one of the other boys I went up with. He was one of his pals. That's who I was in the boys that I was locked up in the induction bit at Berlin anyway, when they put us on to the cubicle together. That's a cubicle for one person. There are four years in it.
Just cramming
I think he kind of got a bit of bother off, like, what happened with him and that boy that was out of day with the prison officers, eh?
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with, like, he probably suffered the same or not. So his name will be there on record. I can't mind his name for the life of me anyway. I dare say you should probably get the records of the folk that went up to court with me.
Yeah, of course.
One of the names was Donnie. It was his pal, like they were co-accused.
The next question, we're on to the next question, Robert. Did you ever tell anyone or try to get help when you suffered from the abuse that you experienced?
I told social workers and that a few years later when they were doing reports for court. I told my gran that and all. I was like, I can't go back there. No, after that happened to me the last time, eh?
So when you told the social workers...
I've told social workers about it a few times, early years, eh? And a lot of their approaches, not to, well, if you're going to keep saying this, I'm putting in a bad report for you. So, like, a lot of all my social work stuff and that, so I've been controlling manipulation as well, eh? To the extent that it's still following me, like,
yeah.
I've done with you, like, that started from the very beginning, and I was on methadone and all that and all, and they were refusing to let me come off that, telling me that it gave me too much clarity. then this is the NHS, by the way, that I'm not going to come off it. It'll give me too much clarity. Like, why does she not want me having clarity?
What did you say? It was methadone.
I ended up on the methadone. It was just more and more. Like, every time I was speaking to someone, just not getting listened to and that, and I ended up. When I became an adult. I didn't. No, that so the funny thing is, I stopped peeing the bed when I started smoking heroin.
Yeah.
And when I started smoking that, I stopped thinking about all of that horrible stuff that had happened to me.
Yeah, it's only natural to fall into something.
Yeah.
Not to try and escape. So you told the social workers a few years ago.
I told social workers that I'd been abused, I'd been tampered with and that and long weekend. Whether and they've noted that or not, it was two different things.
And their approach was to put in a bad report for you?
If you're going to keep saying this has happened, that's like when I got put on the methadone and that as well. The court, I had an order for fast track on a prescription, when I went in. But it's like they done me there and all because I wouldn't change my tune and I refused to dance to their tune. But they said, if you're going to keep saying you take heroin because you were abused when you were younger, I'm breaching you and putting you back in the jail. This was in the building at Falkirk Criminal Justice at Brockville, eh?
1 second.
I was told, if you're going to keep saying that, I'm away on holiday for 2 weeks. That'll give you 2 weeks to think about what your answer's going to be, and it better not be I take heroin because I was abused when I was younger, or you're going back to the jail. So while he was on holiday, I moved out of the area. I moved out of his catchment area. I moved through Falkirk to Fife, and that null and voided my involvement with Falkirk Criminal Justice Social Work, eh? He tried to take today with my methadone and all that. They put me on a fast track program. And they never fast tracked me on anything. It was meant to write, but this is the stuff he was holding there, man. He'd to get me to dance to his tune, refusing to give me a letter for the house because I was homeless. They gave me my own flat right next to Falkirk Sheriff Court.
Yeah.
My living room window looked out onto the side of the building. The council said I was to get a letter for him stating, so at this point I'm a vulnerable adult.
Yeah.
In the care of social work. So I'm in the care of social work, not again. And I think their take on it is that the vulnerable adults will just abuse them some more.
Yeah.
Very much, it seems to be their take on it. So I've told them loads of things. Pretty much every report that I've ever done, I've told them about it, eh? And they've manipulated it. Tell my doctor about it, whether he's noted it or not. I never went to my doctors for years. It wasn't until I had to get stitches taken out my face. That I kind of started going. I mean, even at that, there's a conflict of interest there. I only went to him because my grandson, she knew him. Family friends. He ran about with my dad's big sister and her twin brother. So that's a conflict of interest right away. he was telling me that. And my bedwetting at that point had been getting better, eh? And then it just got worse again, and it wasn't until I started taking heroin that stopped bedwetting altogether. I got put on medication for it this time. I told a doctor, I think about it, Lindbank Addiction Services. They put me on metrazepine for it.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't sleeping right and all that. There's all this stuff going through my head and that. So I tell her about it on that, and that's what I've been dealing with. Put me on metrazepine for it. And they started giving me right vivid nightmares and that again. And I started the bed went and that again. So I stopped that. That was about 4.5 years ago or something. And when I moved up here, up to Perth, and started engaging with services here, And I tell them what was I started at the beginning, what I'm dealing with is severe childhood trauma. Like, so there's more than that, and just a total refusal to know any, eh?
Yeah.
I'm dealing with severe childhood trauma, getting abused off my uncle and stuff like that as well. And he's piling that when I was older. And I got shut down with that. I tried to use my prescription and that to control and manipulate me again, telling me that if I kept, if I went to my GP and that about any of this stuff, that I was getting put back to consume on premises with my methadone and that. Like, I wasn't supervised or anything, but I was going and pick up daily. I was giving them clean samples and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And they were just constantly refusing to give me relaxed suspension and tried to, like, I'd done palliative care work and all that, so I used to have, I'd done hospital at home work and all that as well. So I kind of know a bit about what they should and shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, of course.
Now I went to the social workers and that about it as well. So I went and got myself an advocacy worker, tell her about it. Another one, I had to start at the beginning again. When they gave me a new worker, because the first one they gave me was already terminally ill.
Yeah.
And she's contacted them, an integrated service with the NHS and social work up here. She's contacted them. All I done was ask her to get my medical records for me. I didn't
Yeah.
ask her to make appointments and cancel appointments, that kind of stuff for me. I didn't ask her just to, she said she only done emails. I says, I don't have my glasses on, I can't read emails. I says, so nobody doing any of that.
Yeah.
She's contacted them anyway and says that I've gave her permission for all my appointments and everything to go through her. Why is she doing that? She's terminally ill and off her work all the time and that, and she's off her work terminally ill and dies. So this is, they're all hiding behind this.
Yeah.
Like, I gave you their details and all at Dimitay Street in Perth. Went back in, I was having got reports and that done again. Tell them, I didn't tell them about the prison stuff because it wasn't about going to prison. It was about the stuff that I was kind of dealing with now. Like, I'm going on to that. I mean, I might deal with the stuff when I was a bit younger first.
Yeah.
I mean, why are they still out there doing things to young people?
Yeah, it's not right. Not right at all. Moving on to the next question, I following that, Robert, would be, what was the difference at this placement compared to your placement at Barlinnie?
The placement of Berlin was really that. I think that was just to get sales, not kind of like, I'm not really sure how that works, say, but they weren't really fussed about you, the officers, not Berlin. They were more kind of just like, if you keep your head down, that you'll be all right, kind of thing, like your first time in prison and all that. I just they were kind of like, I can't really fault any prison officers in Berlin apart from when I was in there years later, eh?
What would you say was different at your time in Longreagend compared to your time at Barlinnie?
It felt like the weird, like the stuff prison officers were saying is and stuff like that. Like, it was like they knew who I was. They were like, we know who you are. Gone on about stuff that had happened to me when I was younger and things like that. Like, it's just really weird, eh?
So they
I got ran over a prison officer about 6 years, 7 years before that. I'm gathering that's where she worked, eh?
So the difference in placements.
But just out of treatment for them, just told derog just pretty much constantly derogatory. I maybe only came across to the alright prison officers. And I think that in long again, I think that was probably due to the fact that the boy was on the pass when I went into A Hall on the top flat. The boy that was on the pass was at school with my big cousin. Was a right notorious family from Stirling. Used to be in the paper. Max was one of Max Haney's sons. If you remember her being in the papers, not the head on dealing granny from Stirling and that. Terrorised the rap long that. One of her sons. Lovely boys, eh? Once I got put in with him and his big brother, man, the same kind of hall, everything kind of backed off of it, eh?
And was this when it was your first time there?
Aye, that's the only time I've ever been there that long again, day. They kept moving me about the jail. Like, they'd taken me away at the Sea Hall and left me in a cell there, like, most of the day. Just isolated. No potty to pee in or that, like, because it was slopping out back then. There was nothing like that in there. It was just freezing. Aaron got me hours later and took me back at A Hall over the annex hall and that is. And it wasn't until I was going up there that that's when I got my magazines and stuff there.
Yeah. So now we'll move on to the next part of the witness statement, which would be people involved reporting and institutional knowledge. So if you can remember in your time for the first stint in Barlinnie and Longrigend, who were the main people responsible for your abuse that you experienced? Do you recall
the main
any
people
names?
I don't know any other names. It was like, you weren't even allowed to look at their name tags if they had any on. But it was prolifically mere of the officers that were there in my first few and it was both shifts.
Sorry, the line, Carlton. So you said it was prolific amongst who?
That was not prolific amongst the officers on the annex hall line on both shifts.
What shift pattern did you say, sorry?
The day shift and the back shift. Night shift don't get to come into your cell. It's pretty much just security, eh? They're not to come into your cell and that at night unless it's like a medical emergency around like that.
Yeah. That's perfectly fine. Do you recall the roles of these officers?
They'd come in so you get your morning inspection and a nightly inspection for to do the numbers.
Yeah. Do you recall any descriptions of any of these staff members? So any identifying details, like any tattoos?
Dark hair, like they're all like the same. They're all suited and booted, cropped hair. And I dare say, mate, like they're all military. Because the way they act it is the same way the abusers in my family act it, and they were all military.
Yeah.
Dark hair. Like, it's no... you were constantly made to look at the flare and that. Eyes shut. Right, the first night, and I was up in my room with that bunk. And I've not thought that it's in the huge face of the wall. So they're all running in my bed and face of the wall, eh?
Yeah.
And they came in, like, they wear gloves and that, they're coming in the morning, do dust checks and that kind of stuff, so they've got gloves and that one.
Hard to identify any.
And that next night, these are... I don't know what it's meant to be one, but he's put his hand into my bed.
Yeah, it's understandable. With not being able to identify.
Penetrated my anus with his fingers and that. The next shift came on the next day. And it's been made of the same gloves and that on. Dust inspection nonsense and that.
Yeah.
Make it, they're inspecting the cell and all that, being the bed that's shaped to make sure that it's bolted to the wall and all that rubbish.
Mm.
And for a grope again, unbeknownst to him, that the bed's soaking.
Yeah.
I got ridiculed, mocked. He still had a grope, but then it was all the derogatory stuff and that, so that never happened again. After that, eh, like my mum and that were up to see us. It was a sexual assault in the office after that. After that, it was just all derogatory stuff, things about bed wetting and all that. Moved up into the A-hole bit, and that's when they tried to make me go and pick up all the feces and stuff.
Were there any other children affected, and did you witness abuse or harm to anyone else whilst you were there at Longrigg End?
The prison officers manipulating stuff between another boy from Falkirk and the boy that I was in the cell with in the annex hall, and another couple of boys, and they let him out of his cell and into his cell for the game of beating. The guy was gonna give me a beating just for me being for the next 13, about 5 miles away from him, you know what I mean?
Did you state prison officers between your cellmate, your witness?
I don't know. The attacks might be just been a tactic by then for to get me and him separated. He's witnessed that. Then he starts arguing with somebody, then they let him out to get into his cell to batter him. Then they put him down into the digger in isolation. Then at that point, it's like, oh, can I split it up? I get stuck away in the sea hall for hours with no toilet and all that kind of stuff. And then I get brought back, I get taken up into A hall in the top flat, and that's when they end up going round for their breakfast and that. Used to get a packet of some cheap frozen square sausages, and like them never feed me for your breakfast and that. Like some mornings you get a fry up and stuff. So like the folk had sat and like slice their sausage as thin as they could to get as many pieces and that as they could, because you get that in a boiled egg and like a tatty scone or whatever, eh? And prison officers would walk past and lift food off my plate and stuff.
Yeah.
I was saying about that big, like the other inmate, who was a right big lad, and he got sick. I was sat at his table, and one of his went to snatch my sausage again one morning, and he's ended up grabbing his wrist and he's like, "You'd better leave him alone," he says, "or I'm kicking off again." So I'm gathering by his attitude and that, by the size of him, and I've been gathering he must have been at least 20. He must have been at least 20. Like, he wasn't far off he'd becoming a con, which meant like he then started doing the managing that at Burlinney. But the prison officer's reaction to him, I'm gathering he gave a few of them beatings, eh? And the eased right off, left me alone altogether, really, eh? Apart from that, they take me out and trying to make me pick up the feces and stuff.
Yeah.
As soon as another inmate stuck up for us, all kind of eased off, eh?
Do you believe the staff or the institution knew of the abuse that you was experiencing or what was happening?
Aye. Oh, I do know. They knew. The social work, no. They all know. The NHS knows. They're all just another abusive cult, as far as I'm concerned.
Were complaints
then three
going?
Years then three years later I'm attacked by an off duty prison officer and an off duty police officer, and I got fitted up for that and all, and ended up back in the jail. That was when I tell them, when I was getting the reports for that done, that's when I tell them again I can't go back to the jail. I tell them about the abuse and that happened long again then. But that'll probably be redacted if they take note of it.
While she was at Longrigg End, were any complaints discouraged, ignored, or punished?
No, if anybody was doing any complaining, it was them complaining about my bed being wet. You weren't encouraged to do anything. All you were encouraged to do was today you were telling people looking at the flare.
Yeah.
I'm sure I got put on report for refusing to pick the feces and that up.
And what was the punishment that you experienced?
I wasn't there long enough to get punished for it. Like, I contacted my lawyer. I was just like, I'm just going to plead to this. Went back down to court and got an apology for the judge and told that I'd be at McDonald's and join the McDonald's with my mother very shortly. I apologised to my mother and that and all, saying that I should never even have been brought to court for it. Which means then I should never ever have been unlawed again. I should never ever have been abused.
Of course.
No, that bodes you quite vivid. I shrink at the NHS, but I might keep you quiet about what happened to you when you were younger.
Sorry, say that again.
Knows about it.
Sorry, but you repeat what
you said. Why would somebody try to keep you quiet about all the stuff that happened to you when you were younger unless he knows about it?
Yeah.
I've spoke to the police. The police refused to take a statement off me about all this because it was on methadone. Then they told the social worker they were working with me on it. They shut me down.
Shut you down.
She's the chief inspector at Tayside Police in Dundee. Mm. And Officer Blythe, Miss Blythe. And I thought this is what they've said to me when I phoned up. She's the chief inspector and she can do what she wants. She does not need to explain to anybody about her actions. That's what I was told to them. I've emailed her and that saying, like, I'm no longer a methadone. Would you like to come out and take my statement? And I've just been ignored then.
Yeah.
I phone up, just nonsense, eh? I tell one of my pals about all the abuse and all, Cowden and Beef, or Lindsay Miller, she's now dead. She told my wife about it. Why would I tell my wife about it when she's just like, you're just a junkie, waster, scumbag, that's never done nothing, you'll never be nothing, all this kind of crap. Why would I then tell her about my abuse? But it's there in my medical record. She's talked about my abuse and that.
Yeah.
To police and to Women's Aid. I don't know if you have got that there in my medical records, but it was in mine.
Yeah. No, we have your records and we have reviewed it, and there are some things that do indicate towards what you've
like, I tell my pal Lindsay Miller about it. I quite believe they ran her there. Killed her, eh?
So the
a
final
few folk
question,
that I've dealt a bit that have went missing.
They've gone missing.
Two of them have probably one went missing and three of them are dead.
The final question in relation to people involved in reporting and institutional knowledge. Have you reported the abuse to the police, an inquiry, a professional, or any other authority? And what happened following the report?
I've reported there when I've tried to report abuse to the police, shut down. I've reported it to shrinks, to doctors, reported it to social workers. And it's all just end up with manipulation and control. Damage limitation for them, I think.
And you think this is due to the...
but being institutionally bullied. That's basically what it is, isn't it? And do you know how social work?
Not fully. I've never experienced
it. If you say that you're not engaging with them and all this kind of stuff, which means then their perception of you then becomes truth.
Yeah.
Whatever they write in you then becomes truth. But what they didn't tell is that they manipulate you and they cause all of that.
Yeah.
for then to take that on. That's and they're Christians too. With a Christian born in their body.
Yeah.
That's the devil's work, that.
So the next part, Robert, under the witness statement would be in relation to moving between placements and leaving care. So this would be obviously when you spent the day and the night at Bar Linnet, and then you were transferred to Longrigg End, and then this would be the leaving care part would just be in association to you leaving Longrigg End in 1998. Hold on.
No.
I'm just getting 95, sorry. So it will essentially be from the 11th to the 21st of August 1995. You just need to explain why you moved between these two placements and if the reasons were explained to you.
I never had the reason explained to me why they take you to Bar Linnet for the first night, then take you up to Longrigg End. And if you asked any of them anything to explain anything to you, like it was just a pure power trip, they didn't need to explain nothing to you. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
That's just the approach that like that institutes are rife with them. They don't have to tell you your rights. It takes a lot for you to read up them yourself. That's by law they're meant to be.
Yeah.
But a subject access request and advocacy appeared because they tell me they didn't do then. I don't have to do them in the third party and I don't have to answer anybody.
Yeah.
That's what the CEO tell me.
Obviously, this is going to come across as a bit of a silly question, but did you run away, refuse to return, or ask to be moved during your time?
Years later, I asked not to get returned.
It would this
after
would
I got released, I'd put back to prison again years later.
Yeah,
when I was 19. So yeah. Like a couple of years later, 1998, I go to jail. I was pleading not to get returned back there. Like, tell them about all the abuse and all I suffered.
Thank you for making us aware that I've noted that on the file. Just going to bring back to essentially literally just the two care settings being Bar Linnet and Longrigg End, just the very first two times before you were 18. Anything that happened in relation to any free time at prison after that isn't relevant at this moment in time.
Aye.
Keep it to when you was under 18.
Aye.
So.
But, no, like, once I got out, I did the army, so I was going to run away to the army. After I left Longrigg End, back came to my mum's in Dunipace, 67 Chestnut Crescent.
And was that the age you left when you left there?
Aye.
But being 18.
Aye, I was still a juvenile. But I got there, so it was the next again year. And I decided I had to get away from them. Okay? Like the beatings and that at home from my uncle and that were getting pretty bad.
Yeah.
And on a regular thing, so I was going to do a run out of the army. But that never happened. They wouldn't take me. I got jumped on my way home for the dancing.
Oh, that's awful to be an
off-duty prison officer and an off-duty police officer. An assault and robbery on their part that went wrong for them, and I got to jail for it, but the police refused to charge them with the assault and robbery. Asked me why I got so violent, so I told them. And as soon as I started mentioning abuse, he went, "That's not why we're here," and shut me down.
Not good. Not on. When you was left longer again, just taking you back. So you've mentioned how the judge rang you up, obviously, to issue an apology to say that you shouldn't have been there in the first place, and that you was going to go meet your mum at McDonald's. What age was you when you received this phone call?
I missed that phone call. It was at the court. Court proceedings, you're still 17.
And what were the circumstances afterwards, once you left the court and you was with your mum?
My mum could tell that I was visibly shooting in that, eh? I started drinking quite heavily in that. I was pretty much, I'd read access to alcohol, and started drinking way too much. I tell a family member that I was getting ready to disappear to the army.
Yeah.
And when I was coming home, no long after I turned 18, I was coming home for the local nightclub and jumped by an off-duty police officer and an off-duty prison officer. They shut Parliament down the road, down in London, because of this.
Yeah.
Said that was a thug and a hooligan and needed to start to a society and such. So one of my pals told me that I was doing law at Dundee Uni. Says that the system really doesn't like me.
So moving on to the impact for your whole experience. Coming from, how did the experience affect you at the time?
Well, when I got mayor reports and I done two of my reports, and I'm gathering that part of my sentence was to get COG skills. I never received that either, eh? Like, that would have been another opportunity for me. Like, they were meant to give me all the counselling and working on that to deal with all that stuff, and didn't they?
Yeah. So would you say that throughout your experience, how would you describe the experiences affected you at the time?
I thought I really didn't feel safe. I've got problems trusting people, opening up.
Right.
I'm just going to shut down, eh? I'll switch off.
Yeah.
I disassociate a lot. I've been getting a bit better at managing that lately. Started engaging with a couple of groups. A lot of them been absolutely terrible. And all they've done is helped these folk that have been shutting me down, but all they've done is help them keep me quiet, really.
Sorry again, I'm just typing up what you stated. How would you say it's affected your mental health, this including your anxiety, any depression, trauma symptoms, panic, flashback, nightmares, self-harm or suicidal thoughts?
I didn't do a self-harm for a while and that, eh? I just grew to that, I think. Great. That probably kind of more stoked when I started on the heroin and all, eh? Then it was just a kind of And that kind of gave me my life back for a while, eh?
Not
Before
going
I
into the heroin.
that mad, like, it's not like I didn't need the time of going to the doctors or that either.
Yeah.
It was just my, the constant just got fobbed off for them. I still got dealing with problems and that I had to when I was younger, eh? Like I just I didn't trust them. I didn't trust anybody really. My brother, that's about it. My brother and my mum, I trust my girlfriend, eh? But the rest of them, no, I just had a pretty profound effect on my relationship with my partner.
Yeah.
She's just constantly witnessed and shut me down about all this. I've been dealing with the runner and trying to get information.
Yeah. We'll be able, if you obviously still like us to do that, we are able to get a supporting statement from not only your mother, but we can get it from your partner as well, if they're, obviously if they're willing to do so. But moving on to the next question. How has it affected your mental health? That being, as if you got any issues with your sleep, any pain what occurred from your time at Lovrengen and Barlinnie, any alcohol or substance use?
Christ.
Again,
I end up,
we're near the end, but if you'd like to take a few moments.
I'll just tell you about it, Lenny. I chose to end up drinking quite heavily and all that after I got out. I done like an alcohol course and stuff like that. And I kind of, but like when I done that alcohol course and that, because like stuff at the time when I was younger and that was alcoholics and that, it was like everybody just blaming the drink. And like when I was in doing a thing, I done a counselling course and that when the drink and stuff. And I never ever followed up any other counselling stuff and that. I kind of just stuck to that. Then I obviously ended up in the heroin, so it was like one or the other. And I'm kind of glad I stuck to the heroin, to be fair, rather than the drink. I just kind of numbed it off, made it all right for me. Like I held in my job and all that for years. Like, it was pretty much a really high functioning addict. Like, I had it for years. I had still got clubbing and away to gigs and all that kind of stuff.
Has it affected any relationships that you've had growing
aye.
Up?
It's affected a lot of relationships. I don't talk to like any of my family really. I'm like the oldest, but all my mum's siblings. My mum's got 8 sisters and 4 brothers. So I'm the oldest of all my cousins and stuff on my mum's side of the family. And I've never done any wrong to any of these people. But after I'd been in long again and stuff like that, and when I'd been talking to social work and stuff like that, the stuff that happened to me, the mayor I spoke about the stuff that happened to me, the mayor, they distanced themselves from me.
Yeah.
Like, they all got me to watch their wains and all that when I was younger. Why would they not get their brother to watch them? Like the one that used to babysit me. The mayor I spoke about what happened to me when I was younger and that, and what happened to me in there. The mayor, they've distanced themselves from me. I don't get invited to family functions or anything like that. No, that I'm bothered about it because they're all scumbags, eh?
Yeah.
And when I went to report it to the police and stuff like that, like any of this stuff, or any like this woman that says she's working with me, all this stuff and that. They were like, why do you not go, like, you should go down at Falkirk to report this? No, he's a police Scotland, and I can go to any police station to report this, and I cannot go into Falkirk police station to report it, because my auntie works for the very team that they're dealing with. So that's, there's a conflict of interest.
Yeah, of course.
And how did she get her job in there when you started her doing twice already?
Yeah.
But to get into the police altogether, third time lucky. Or was it dishing out information?
How would you say it's affected your education, work, confidence?
My education, work,
as well as your family's powers and our day-to-day stability as well. How would you say it affected you?
Day-to-day?
Yeah, so from your experience, did it have any effect on your education?
Aye.
Have any effect on your work, effect on your confidence, effect on any opportunities?
Right, it's affected loads of stuff.
And what could you highlight?
I wanted to go to the army. I wanted to become a police officer. Right, after being subject to that, for folk that have been, they've came for their backgrounds and that, why would anybody want to get involved with any of that? I can see it off of where it is, and all they are is domestic terrorists. That's what they should be getting done with, domestic terrorism. They've turned people's trauma into a weapon and used it against them on a massive scale, so that to me is terrorism. Domestic terrorism. You're meant to say these people that are meant to be there to help you, and you open up to them about it, and they just shut you down or just refused to know any, and because somebody's made a comment about your mental health, they then start running with that like it's a diagnosis. So in it, and I now say, because my wife says I'm an undiagnosed paranoid schizophrenic, I'm not need to try and prove to them that I'm not.
Yeah,
I've actually had a worker, they're still refusing to take notes. I'm sure I recorded her, and I was like, in this paranoid schizophrenia stuff, and she's like, what, so you aren't a paranoid schizophrenic then? No, I'm not. I've no reason to be paranoid. Like, the penny for me a couple of years back, and I can connect all the dots. I'm certainly not paranoid. I'm not paranoid schizophrenic, that imagines things. I've got a healthy paranoia like everybody else. I'm just a wee bit more intuitive to the body language and that folk have. I find I can be really arrogant and that, which is a defence mechanism, eh?
Yeah, of course.
Gives me a better read of people. Like, gives you a better read of people, especially of people in power. Because that's your true character shown, when you give somebody a better power.
Yeah, of course. Power and money.
All right.
So next, are there any triggers what you experience in your day-to-day life? What throws you back to the institutions or the situations that you try to avoid?
Folk in uniforms.
Filling in forms.
People in uniforms.
Oh, people in uniforms, sorry about that.
People in uniforms, like, as soon as they're near us, like, my back's up. I really don't trust any of them at all. Like, and the ones that are... say they're good guys, are generally just kid on good guys, eh?
Yeah.
Like, none of them want to go and investigate their own. So, but the day is paying you to be a nutcase when they believe you. And
yeah,
they do that through the sanctity of marriage, eh?
Mm-hmm. It's hard to obviously try and defend yourself and try and... tell people who you are when they're only taking account of one person's opinion and taking that as fact. Obviously, you're going to try and struggle, especially with all what you've experienced is behind you as well. People just assume and make a negative opinion.
Then you talk to the folk that are in power that make the decisions and that for getting charged for stuff in your life. Well, you explain it to them, tell them exactly what's going on. Like, you're getting there and you're opening up to them, and their take was like, no, what I'm going to do, I'm going to get this, and if it's three, I'm going to assault him and say that he's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I've been physically assaulted in that while dealing with this in the last couple of years, eh? Been physically assaulted again.
So when you said you've been physically assaulted, have these been like people you may have been had conflict on the street?
People that I went to about this, that why I take drugs, because you know, that's the folk that are meant to be helping me with that. I was assaulted by one of them, and they assaulted me, then they went in front of the police.
Do you know who the name is?
I reported them to the police.
Colin who, sorry?
Colin Payton up at IDAP, Integrated Drug and Alcohol Services in Perth, social work.
Did you say Payton? P-A-Y-T-O-N.
Payton, yes. Colin Payton, yes.
Yeah.
I was assaulted by him. I was on my crutches, and he squared up to me and banged into me with his chest and that, and tried to knock me out on my crutches, then followed me out of building golden me and that. When I done was kept politely asking him to leave me alone. I was like, you just about knocked me off my crutches and that there. He just assaulted me. And I made a report to the police. The police came out and lifted me and took me into the cop shop to question me, saying that I'd threatened to hit him with a brick. And I phoned them up and says, I'd be just battering my head off the brick wall and asking news people for help. They phoned the police and says, I threatened to hit him with a brick. It's the NHS, these calls are meant to be recorded.
Yeah.
No recordings. But they'll whip me in. They're abusing people on a massive, massive scale. People that are dealing with the same stuff for the same place are up here. I speak to them all at groups and that.
Yeah.
And all they're doing is damage limitation for them, basically, and controlling folk with their trauma and that.
My final question in relation to the impact of your experience of receiving the abuse and care, what impact would you say it's had on your life overall, and what do you think would have been different if you'd never experienced what happened?
If I hadn't experienced that, Christ, I don't know. I really don't know.
That's fine.
I've really not got a clue in my life for the minute.
Yeah, it's a difficult question to try and answer, really, isn't it? That's perfectly fine. The answer what you gave is still fine. So, this is in regards to support and treatment. Have you received counselling, therapy, mental health, addiction help, GP, hospital, or any other professional support?
No. When I went in and asked when the trauma-informed care or the trauma-informed approach of that starts, I've been put out of practice. I've been told there was a witness there for an integrated drug and alcohol team, and I no longer have a GP. And I need to have a GP for them to prescribe me my Subutex, my Buvidal. So what happens with that when I got up here on Thursday? They're going to give me my injection. Right, this is the stuff I went to the social work, but now they're meant to be there. Their duty of care is to me. I've been told for Colin Payton, his associate, Louise Glover, told me that her duty of care is not towards me, it's to her work colleagues. No,
yeah.
I'm not there. No, I'm a vulnerable adult. She's a social worker. Her duty of care is to me to make sure they're not abusing their position with me. So you go to them and ask them why there's no notes of that being kept, or why this approach was intent. Because that's just the way it is. Then trying to kill you. I'm not paranoid about that either. Like, apparently I've imagined all this, like me phoning up and asking to speak to a healthcare professional because I hadn't had my methadone for 5 days.
Yeah.
Oh, just drink your last day's methadone. That could have killed me. That should have been struck off. They should have phoned up the chemist and put a hold of my prescription and no gave me any more bottles. Yeah, I could go into the chemist the next day and get another 3 bottles. So I ended up with a week's worth.
Mm.
I had to bully them into letting me off the methadone and they're on the Buvidal injection. Like, you're in telling them about all the abuse and that. And one of them's emailed your doctor telling them not to treat you, that you're moving back to Falkirk. I'm not moving back to a place that broke me. Would you move back to a place that broke you? No, David. So that's it. That you'll have the emails and that there and the medical records. As soon as I started talking about it on the thing, I'm no lying about this. You can apply to the doctors in Glover Street for the recordings. They're putting drug treatment in that. My sick lines, it's not nothing I've went to my doctor for. I've been on drugs.
We've not got recordings of phone calls, but
there's recordings there, Dave. I've got them. Once I fix my phone, I'll send you them. But I've got recordings of a GP saying it's a new thing that they do with IDARP. I've applied to them for the paperwork, and I've asked IDARP for the paperwork, and it goes with it because it doesn't exist. It's not a thing.
No. Have you been?
So tell me, I'm not being institutionally bullied for wanting to talk about what happened to me. In an institute ran by them.
Have you been diagnosed with any relevant conditions?
Oh, sorry, I told a criminal justice worker when I was in my mid-30s at Dunfermline. Tell them what I was doing. They were the only ones that actually ever really gave me any help. And she got me a counsellor to speak to, and she was just finishing her doctorate or something like that. So I'd done an 8-week course with her, and I tell her about logic, and she was like, Christ, Robert. She says, just for your treatment for the police and the prison service, she says, you've got severe complex PTSD, never mind everything else that's went on. So she was told about it, and they never tried to talk to anybody else about it, so like doctors and that, just been like, then what do you want me to do? And just no note in it at all.
So have you taken any medication in relation to the PTSD?
No, this was a shrink that was doing an 8-week course with through criminal justice. Nothing. Like they ambushed me about a year ago. The social work started coming and ambushing me at my NHS appointments for my injections and that. Now, I've sat and spoke openly in front of the NHS nurses to the social work up there. Is anyone that say that I haven't had liars? Oh, sorry, not to call them that anymore. If you say the word liar, it's aggressive. They're non-truths. So when are they going to say that calling them a non-truther is aggressive? Know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is the way society's heading, mate. All thanks to the dirty beastly creeps.
Are you receiving support now?
No. Went to receive report. I went in and I told Jackie Lyons at the Stephen Lyons organisation here in Perth absolutely everything that happened to me. Pretty much absolutely everything that happened to me. The day dot. And she just sat there going, oh, you're well versed. You're well versed. You're well versed. You're well versed. Well, I could see you on a Friday. I was like, I've got commitments on a Friday.
Yeah.
With the Scottish Drugs Forum. I go to a group with the Scottish Drugs Forum every Friday. I said, I've got commitments on a Friday. I'll be in touch then. Nothing. And for somebody to sit and go, you're well versed, you're well versed. I actually don't do counselling. I'm actually not a counsellor. I just sit here and let you rabble on. That does more damage than the actual abuse itself. And that is abuse.
Of course.
You're not meant to just sit and folk ramble on like that.
It's negligent as well, really, isn't it?
Aye.
Pretty
much every service I've went to here, I went to, what was that other one? Mindspace or something, it was called. And I tell them, I know, cheap out of thing of Russian dolls and a wee bag of pebbles. And I told them, I know, she's like, why is it in a timeline? She just sat down and went, night, speak to me. I didn't do any of that. I used to be a drug worker. Oh, you one of the ones that made us jump through fiery hoops? Not for the last 15 years. Got the sack as soon as the NHS came there. I know you're not qualified for this job, Penn, especially, but that's before you've even opened your mouth and says, I just like your Avalon. That was two of them. And one of them's opened this counselling place because her son committed suicide.
Yeah. Some people.
How many of your folks are going to commit suicide because of her, other than her son?
Yeah.
If that's the right, that's our approach to counselling and that, and to helping folk deal with their trauma.
You feel like some people only want to get involved and help if they've got like a direct link or association.
Aye, she's like probably got a direct link. There's laddie stringing his cell up.
So we're on to the final parts of the witness statement. Now there's only a few couple of questions left, Robert. So this is just an evidence and supporting information. Just quick questions being, what records may support your statement? So any care records, social work, school records?
Obviously, there'll be records that may be in there. And on the end, there should be stuff in all my social work reports and all that. But what they do now and all is, and somebody leaves their employment, all gets redacted because they're not to go on about what any of them's done or said or whatever. No, you're not to call them untruthers or that, or tell them that they're untruthers. You're not to talk about your trauma. Like, it's all right for them to be showing Wayne's dollies and that and saying, have you got the right genitalia? No, this kind of pish. But I'm not to remember shit that's fucking happened to you, young, but they're allowed to fucking remember they were born in the wrong body. You get me?
Yeah, I do get you, brother. Are there any records?
I cannot possibly remember anything that happened to me when I was younger. Apparently.
It's like anything to try and not deal with the problem, isn't it?
Aye.
From what you said. Which is obviously not the way they should have been operated, and they should have done the due diligence to try and help you and give you the support that you need. And
right.
It's very unfortunate to hear that the council has failed you in this way, Robert. Just to continue on with the evidence and any support and information, is there any records of injuries, running away, behaviour or school changes, self-harm, substance use, complaints, moods or family contact issues?
There's loads of stuff there, like that's going to pull me into going on about other stuff and that and all. It isn't meant to be relevant to us, but it's all relevant. It's all relevant to me, eh?
Yeah, well, of course it'll be relevant to you. It's something that will probably stick with you for a while, and this is what
we'll... Honestly, like, there's pretty much no ending in life that hasn't flung it, that could be flung me, that hasn't even flung at me, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Sorry, whenever I go quiet, it's what you
with that bad at one point, I stung myself up.
Yeah. That's unfortunate to hear.
It's not like I didn't try for years to get the hell out of Dodge on a permanent basis. That just never seems to take.
Sorry, just catching up on the notes, I do apologise for that. Moving on to the next question, are there any letters, photographs, reports, inquiry evidence, apologies, decisions of previous correspondence?
Don't know. I don't know. See, the thing is, how often do they delete all their recordings and all that? Their CCTV and whatever else?
It usually just depends upon the institution.
But I know Police Scotland delete all their CCTV every 3 months, according to Perth Sheriff Court.
That's peculiar. You wouldn't think they'd do that, but...
That's right weird, that, eh? Mm-hmm. But the only reason they might be doing that is if they're up to no good themselves.
That are possibly, like, storage reasons, like there's too much film to keep on, but even so, like, you'd think it would be saved somewhere, like a backup server.
Yeah.
So the next question is, Robert, could any sibling, former resident, a relative, a friend, partner or professional provide a supporting statement?
My mum, like, I could get, my brother could probably be a better statement, and all the states and that I can't do it in every year, eh? My mum and all, and my partner's really just, she's just been there for us, for me, like, when I was like, bugger, it's like, if I can't get rid of this, I'm going to deal with it, and I'm not going to be letting folks stop me dealing with it either.
No, of course. You deserve
it. It's not hard to do your job and do it right. It's not a hard job. You've got to just sit there and listen to somebody. You know what I mean? No, shut them down. The only reason they've got to shut somebody down is if they're involved in it or not somebody involved in it. What other reason have they got to shut you down unless they're up to that kind of stuff themselves?
And finally, for evidence and support and information, Robert, our records are missing or incomplete, and hasn't an evidence bundle already been obtained by yourself?
No, whenever I try to obtain evidence, I get the runner in and fobbed off. Or they didn't give me all the stuff I've asked for. Or they just send me dingy empty emails. Or just patch me altogether. But for the day of criminals now, is you can't do any comment or anything like you stay silent. They're taking your silence as an admission of guilt now. And criminal courts and police stations and all that. So when I say they usually use just our paedophile beastie gets then and they decide to stay silent, is that them admitting their guilt then?
It's
they
not.
Can't have it one way for one and one way for the other.
No,
I mean?
Definitely not. It has to be ambiguous and fair, doesn't it?
So but the it's next never going to be.
No. Hopefully things will change in the next coming future. But the next part, we're only into the last three sections of the witness statement now, Robert, so it won't take too long. Have you previously made any civil claims, any criminal injuries claims? Have you had any previous redress applications?
No.
Police?
No. I put a claim in for the slopping out years ago, but I'm gathering, like, I wrote out to that for the jail, and they've obviously just seen who the letter's gone to and just been like, right in the bin, mate, because that's what everybody in the jail was getting to deal with. Because the prison officers were only getting a payout for the slot, mate, they started just flinging everybody's paperwork in the bin. I never got a response or that for a lawyer or that about it. But I wrote to a couple, and it was every time I was in the jail I wrote to them, eh?
Yeah.
So they've just seen that it's getting posted to such and such a lawyer. Or bin.
Seems like it if you're not getting any correspondence back.
And so, is there no lawful way to get rid of all this redacted nonsense and that? Because if that's the case, then if that's how easy it is for them, they just redact everything I've ever said to them. Because I've done everything, they've been manipulating me. Now, I've stood at it and I've waited to they've used the manipulation tactics and that. It's all right, because I know what I need to do lawfully to get them. You know what I mean? If that's what they're doing, is saying that if you stay silent, you're guilty. Well, I've been learning a lot of stuff with SDF, and I know what I have to do to get them all over it. So that's why they refuse to give me their work's email addresses and stuff.
Well, like
I... I'm going to, like, when I get all that information that I've used, I've already started writing a book. I know I need to do so I don't get done with slander and that kind of stuff. Is this your wife? Well, that's these comments and that, and about you, would you like to comment before I go to print?
And
that's all I need to do. And if they didn't want to comment, we'll just take their silence as an admission of guilt.
Yeah. Like I said before I called you for the witness statement, remember, if you obviously would like the records that we've obtained, we're very happy to obviously provide you.
Definitely.
No problem. So essentially now we're just doing the reason for applying to the redress scheme, and then it will just be a few follow-up closing questions and a welfare check before we conclude today. So why are you applying for the Scottish redress scheme, and what would you like to come from telling your story today?
That wasn't even something I thought about. But then I was talking to somebody at a group I went to, and they were like that the way it changed your outlook on life, and the way you trust people, like everything that's affected pretty much every aspect of my life. And by advice, I don't know, like that I can't go and do the job or that I wanted to do when I was a kid or anything. I never got to follow my dreams. They've all got plenty of everybody's got plenty to say about you until you ask them to say it to you,
Yeah, of course. I found that people tend to judge no matter what, Robert, even if you do good or bad.
They like to judge, but they don't like to be judged.
No, not at all. People like to throw stones when they come from glass houses.
The places it takes you in that. that trauma, and where you go. Eh? Well, I know what's at the other side of the veil. I know what's waiting there.
What would you like to come from the Scottish region application? What would you like to obviously receive in relation to it?
I want a twist to come out, that's what I want. But that'll never happen either, will it? But is it going to be like, if I get accepted to this, if I stay quiet and all that nonsense?
Sorry, say that again, Robert.
Like, if it comes to this, like, see, like, if I get offered a payment and that, so does that mean I have to keep stimming all that?
No, so what will happen once we submit application to the Scottish Redress and being any supporting statements from your mother, brother, or partner, what you'd like to take, we'd provide that to the panel along with the records that we've obtained, what support, what you said within the witness statement.
Okay, so I'm not a panel, you know, I've never had the best experience of them either.
So you won't go to the panel. It's an independent panel where they would receive your application and they would go through and review your application and to review the care settings, what you've been involved in and the experience you've had, and then they will issue any compensation what they deem is fit to be awarded, and then obviously they would acknowledge what you experienced in care and provide a formal apology and acknowledgement to yourself.
I wouldn't mind a counsellor like the one that the Criminal Justice in Dunfermline got me that's actually going to sit there and listen to me. I wouldn't mind them actually giving me somebody that's willing to do their job right.
Yeah. A lot of the people who are working on the redress scheme, being the caseworkers at Scottish Redress, are very dedicated to the work and wanting to try and provide and give justice to those who have been experiencing
what I wanted to is I wouldn't mind private healthcare. Right, yeah. So I don't have to go and deal with these torturous NHS idiots. Like, you'll see it in medical records and that. And I got up there and I tell a woman that I got assaulted and that. And she wrote, didn't she, and I'm about fighting with six, drinking every week. I don't drink. Saying that I'm about drinking, fighting with 15 and 16-year-olds every weekend and all this. I tell her I was hit by a bus. And I was like, if it ever happens again, I says, no, what I'll do, I says, I'll fling myself on the ground and I'll milk it. Is that what I'll do? But because I've not come in here in an ambulance, I could not possibly have been hit by a bus. The woman could hardly speak a word of English. So how the hell did she get all that out of my conversation? Like, the language was a barrier, as it was when I got put on the mitrazepine and that.
Yeah.
Especially, like, it's bad enough, like, we speak the same language, and it's bad enough us trying to understand each other. Never mind a foreign national. You know what I mean?
Of course. What would the acknowledgement of the Scottish Redress mean to you?
Acknowledgement? The Scottish Government acknowledging that this actually did go down.
Yeah.
That would make me feel a lot better. It made me feel a lot better, eh? Wouldn't make me feel any safer, but it made me feel a lot better.
Well, hopefully we'll be able to make you feel somewhat better once we submit your application. Is there anything else what you'd want Scotland to is there anything else you want Redress Scotland to understand about what happened or the harm you have lived with?
I mean, is there anything they could do about that or understand it? Unless they live it themselves, eh? I wouldn't mind seeing if Wyland could maybe do the minute mile in my shoes.
I can imagine. anyone probably struggled, to be fair. I tried to understand what you've been through, but no one at that age should have gone through what you've come through. And all I can really say is just obviously.
Okay, so I'd already been through worse than that at that point. I mean, it's the I get the like, my name's no Yeshua. Like, I'm not here to carry their trauma for them. And then you see, like, my trauma is not my own. Like, why should I be carrying theirs?
No, of course.
Well, they set this trauma on anybody. Then that just turns it into generational nonsense, doesn't it?
Of course.
Like, it's affected me being a failure in my wings and all that. It's affected all my relationships. Their outlook on it is the abused must then be an abuser. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But not once have they ever came to speak to me about it. Not even when I was a younger child, like when I was a child, like the child psychologist and the child social worker and all that. Like a bit nonsense of their own, but will we ever get to see that?
So that concludes the witness statement now, Robert. It's just a final few things that I need to ask. So, is there anything important that we've not covered or wording you want handled?
I end up with me all over the place, all the time, man. It's everything's all right, eh? I just need to put one again. It's a bloody highly strung.
How are you feeling after discussing this, and do you feel safe to end the call?
My partner's there.
No, that's good to hear that there's someone there for you. Again, just a follow-up. Is there someone you can contact for support, or would you like support?
I was talking to a worker doing it while I'm up. Drop-ins. I've got to be a couple of drop-ins, not. It was every week, but it's normally been fortnightly now. I sometimes drop in a couple of other centre things and that. I'm getting myself out of the house and that a bit there. I've got another car and stuff, eh?
Social worker, did you say?
Not a social worker. Another counsellor. I didn't trust the social worker up here. I really didn't trust the counsellor.
Yeah.
I went to him and said, this, I know they've done it, shut me down. Damage limitation on their part, eh? I went to a couple of other ones, and one of the ones I've met at a drop and I go to, and I think that's it, and they seem brand new, so I'm running up in and see them, eh?
Oh, that's good to hear that you've
got some. I'll get my workers through one of their kind of groups and that I go to come with us, because they didn't deal with that kind of stuff.
No.
So I've got a couple of kind of folk there I trust enough for to support maybe stuff and that, eh? And my criminal justice worker's an ex-prison officer, so him being that kind of background and that always helped me a lot too. It's kind of changed my outlook and that and a lot of stuff. I'm getting there slowly but surely, eh?
Well, that's the main thing, as long as you're getting there. That's the main thing, Robert. Just hold on 1 second, just while I give us some information. So, Rob, I'm just going to discuss with you now the next steps. I'm just going to discuss with you now the next steps in relation to your application. So at some point, we're going to need just a verification of your ID. So it will just be a quick video call with our solicitor, which will be on a Thursday, but we'll have booked to arrange a date anyway, what's best available for you both. We'll end up needing to take you back to details for when we submit your application to the Scottish Police. As well, our witness statement, what we've conducted today will be sent to you, just so you can check if there's any errors, any mistakes, anything that's been left out, or anything that you feel.
When I started engaging with the Integrated Drug and Alcohol Services not up here, and then they kept shutting me down.
Yeah.
I contacted my GP and said that I was threatening them. All I threatened to do was give them to tell them what had happened to me.
Yeah.
I says, I wonder if I tell you what happened to me. I says, I wonder if what happened to you what happened to the last folk I tell. Then they says, I threatened them with violence. Then that Louise Glover was like, oh, Robert, please do that to me. Please don't tell me about any of that. But they didn't see anger as being an upset emotion. But sending things to my GP, like they're going, what's she going on about my GP? What's my father got to do with my addiction, or my father dying got to do with my years of addiction and that?
Yeah.
Like emailing my GP and that, like, it's just, I'm going to sit there and I'll tell you about everything that's happened to me for day dot. She begged me not to do it. And she had the NHS nurses and that witnessed all this. Ambushing me appointments and getting me up to high dome that in front of nurses and stuff. To try and like, threatening to help the blood, you end up with the police and that at your appointments. I says, do you think so? I says, well, that's good. I says, because we'll get to witness all your wrongdoings, anyway. And I ended up phoning the police and asking the police to come to my appointments with me. She's like, please going to tell me about this happening and that.
Yeah.
She shouldn't have been doing that either. Eh? She's like, all right, come with me then. We'll get you some counselling and stuff. I'm still waiting on this shrink, eh? Like,
yeah.
That was her, over making an intervention. What's happening with this intervention? This is like a year and a half ago.
Year and a half ago now.
Aye.
Oh. So the services of mental health and also NHS in a whole just needs a new rework. It seems as though people aren't getting help with the need, is it?
See if I choose a related as a female.
Oh, you would have thought.
They wouldn't be long to take me any whack my tackle off.
So in relation to the next steps, so I'll, if with you, obviously your mother's consent, your brother's consent, I will be able to contact them and just have a brief witness statement, supporting statement from them.
I forgot to get my mum's email address.
Yeah, that's fine. You can just, because what we'll end up doing anyway, Robert, is that we're going to end up sending you this witness statement for you to sign and so obviously send back to us, and then we'll be able to go through the steps of submitting it to the panel. But when that comes, you could email us over your contact details for your mother, just put obviously a name and then a relation to you, and then also the same for your brother, name and relation to them, contact details, and the same for your partner as well. I believe we've got your number for your mother, and we've also got your number for your partner on the file, what we collected 2 days ago. So we can go ahead and give them a call, and then we'll ask them they're willing to do the witness statement, to do a supporting statement if you do have time. Obviously, we'll conduct it right then and there. But once we've collected all that, we'll then submit it to the Scottish Grievous panel, and then we're trying to hope between anywhere between 8 to 12 weeks of a response. And then when that response comes through, obviously you'll be made aware. Any compensation that is rewarded to you will be paid out. And there's, well, the acknowledgement of the government's failure in their due diligence of your control of care will be provided to you as well.
Cheers.
Okay, no problem. I'd just like to say, just to take, obviously, the rest of the day just to try and
I'm just going
unwind
to go.
And relax.
Okay.
Yeah, it sounds good. Try and clear your head. And obviously, if there's anything what you want to discuss about further, you can just give us a call. We will probably end up sending this witness statement to you for your own records in probably the next 1 or 2 days. Just need to obviously make sure that everything's, every T's been crossed and every I's been dotted, basically. And then once that is done, we'll hopefully we'll be able to have your application progress and then you'll get the recognition and the apology that you truly deserve, Robert.
Thanks very much, James.
Yeah, no
You've
problem.
Been brilliant.
You too. I'm very, I feel privileged that you've been able to open yourself up with me today. And if there's anything you would like to obviously follow up on, even if you just want to, you know, call up and just try and get some things off your chest just a little bit, just feel free to do it, and we'll try and help you in any way possible. Yeah, no problem.
Much appreciated, my man. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome. We'll speak to you soon. Have a good
day. Speak to you soon, my man. Thanks, bye.
Have a good one, Robert. Bye.